This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 44, for Monday, December 8th, 2008. Real World Silverlight 2. In this week's interview, Larry sits down with Eric Willicke, an architect who works for Incubook, a startup that's using Silverlight 2 technology. Let's listen in. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm recording an episode of The Thirsty Developer in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was down here for one of our events called Arc Ready, and I've run into some of my friends. We're actually going to probably do a couple shows tonight, but I want to first introduce Eric. Eric, can you tell the people about yourself?
Hi, Larry. I'm Eric Willicke. I am the software architect with Incubook.com, and I've been working with .NET over 6 years now.
Cool.
Since it first came out.
So we're actually going to talk about real-world Silverlight. You actually did a talk for the .NET user group last week, and I wasn't able to be down in Indianapolis to see the talk, but I heard it was very good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I always think it's my favorite thing is when somebody from the community steps up. It's great to have speakers from Microsoft come in, to local user groups, or to have luminaries like Billy Hollis and, Rocky Latka come in. But I think that some of the best presentations are when, a local guy steps up and shares his knowledge with the local community. You get that real connection there. So I want to thank you for that. I'm sure the community here thanks you also. But we're going to do a podcast version of your talk, and it was on real-world Silverlight. So tell us the premise of your talk.
Okay, well, one of the organizers of NDA asked me to do a talk on Silverlight. They knew I'd been working with it since 1.0 and throughout the beta process for 2.0. And I decided that rather than try to target on a technology, because a lot of people have heard about that and talked about Deep Zoom, talked about the data grid, talked about all these neat things that Silverlight can do, but what I haven't heard is anybody talking about how to actually use it to earn money, how to use it on a website with hopefully lots and lots of users to do real things that those users will pay you for. So Incubook.com is not one of those sites where we have this nice Silverlight front end that entices people in because it's a nice flash alternative and then takes them to our real website. We actually have exactly the opposite, where we have some nice ASP.NET and CSS up front that we actually hired out to a marketing company. And then that draws the people to the Silverlight.
So tell us a little bit about Incubook.
Well, Incubook is a photo book editing application. In its simplest form, you upload a lot of pictures, and you organize them into different layouts and templates, pick some backgrounds, pick what kind of cover you want to put on it, give us some money, and we give you a very nice-looking book. It's a crowded marketplace already, but so far we think we're doing pretty well.
And the concept here is self-publishing, right? So I'm going to create a book, probably for my own use, but if I wanted to, do a book with pictures of my kids or maybe from my recent vacation, then I could probably order like 5 or 10 copies and give it to some of my closest friends or my relatives, right?
Yeah, one of our most popular things is weddings, where they'll send out a copy of this book to the entire wedding party, and then sport yearbooks, where an individual team, like a volleyball team or a football team, will put together an example of their season and send it out to people on the team, sell it through the boosters, whatever.
And you guys are actually classified as a startup company, right?
We are. We have a holding company, actually a venture capitalist from California, that own us. And they own several properties in Indiana and Bloomington, Indiana, that is. But we are a very small startup that is just happens to share a bunch of core services with these other companies.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool, because normally when we think about startups, we do think about California, right? San Francisco, Silicon Valley, San Jose, that area comes to mind. There are other cities that have good startup communities, like Boston, and Chicago's got, a good one. You don't normally think of Indianapolis. Have you guys, had any issues with, the startup mentality and how it applies, here?
We do and we don't. It's very interesting how the startup mentality gets projected across the country, because the board is in California. They don't have day-to-day interaction with us, so that's all by proxy through the marketing department, through the ASI Incorporated management structure. And while there is the pressure of a startup, as long as you're capable of executing, they're not going to come in and tell you exactly how to do it.
I think one of the real advantages is you're probably not competing with a bunch of other startups for the scarce resources that if you were in a startup, rich environment like the Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah, that's very true. Finding good developers, good marketing individuals. There are a lot of people in Indianapolis that want to be part of companies that get started, but many of the alternatives are line of business apps or large established enterprise applications that you don't have an opportunity to really make a difference on.
And then there is a really good reason why Incubook, which is a publishing, startup, is in Indianapolis. And this is mainly for our listeners worldwide or people who may not be familiar with it. But, one of the big industries here in Indianapolis is the publishing industry, right?
Yeah, we have a number of large traditional publishers. We're also nearby to Bloomington, Indiana, home of Indiana University. And there's a lot of publishing activity down around that area, including the main Author House offices, which is one of our sister companies. There's also WordClay down there, which is a competitor to Lulu and offers additional services. But Indiana does have a lot of publishing.
So you ready to talk a little bit about Silverlight?
I think I am.
Okay. So, as you talked about, you've got the glitzy, glamorous part of your website that tells people, how the process works. And by the way, I fully intend to, I've been on your website a couple times just testing out making a book. I fully intend to actually do one because I just got off this great vacation and my wife's birthday is coming up and I think I'm going to surprise her with a book from our vacation. So I'm looking forward to actually, hitting buy on the website and actually getting a book in the mail. But let's talk about what the Silverlight application actually does for you.
Okay, so we'll start with what it does, and then maybe we can move into why we chose it in that direction. But the core of our application is two pages. One is a dashboard where the user can see all the books they've created. They see the front cover, and they see some stats about the book, like how many people they've invited, how many pictures they've uploaded, things like that. And then by far, the majority of our application is focused around the other page, which is our editor surface. And this is a single screen in Silverlight, not a full screen Silverlight, but it does fill most of the available space that allows you to view all of the assets you've uploaded, such as images or documents. You can choose from all the templates we've provided, all the various backgrounds, and you can see each page as you build it. The core central part of the page is very reminiscent of the original page turn demo from the early Silverlight samples.
Right, from the 1.0 time frame, right?
Right, and we actually were inspired by that and building our own, but we've juiced it up with all the different things that let you actually build a book instead of just looking at a book. We have rolled in our own text editor based off one of the CodePlex projects. We have done some very basic image manipulation, although we're not actually editing images and changing colors or anything like that, and lots of other capabilities around laying out a book.
Yeah, and there's a lot of user input because, you can put your own caption on the pages, right? And I always tell people it's like, your application crosses a certain line when you start accepting, input from the user because, they get into these nasty things about making mistakes and, you got to watch out for malicious code and things like that, right?
Yeah, we've had very little difficulty with malicious code and the security aspects just because of the nature of the web service boundary we're working across. But at the same time, very accurate guess there. The text editing capabilities have proven to be the most difficult aspect of building this application. The photo editing, we were able to constrain the user to a fairly basic set of operations. Put your picture there, pan it around to various positions, zoom in and out, maybe rotate it. But text is wide open. I mean, you have to account for all the things that they ever accounted for in Microsoft Word on a website.
Do you guys have spell checking, for instance?
We have had a lot of requests for it, but trying to do so in a Silverlight world is not something we've focused on yet.
Right, because that's not a capability that actually ships with the platform, so you'd be having to roll your own and thunk back to a web service or something.
Yeah, we're looking forward to utilizing some of the third-party components that are starting to come out now. We have a pretty good relationship with Component One, and that some of the developers there have helped us out quite a bit. So I think we'll be in good shape going forward, but thus far we've basically had to build our own editor with a little help from some of the startup CodePlex projects that are out there.
So before we jump into why you picked Silverlight, because I think there's some really good questions, really good conversation about that, because you talked about the controls and things like that. Describe a little bit of the architecture of your application as much as you can share, because you did talk about some back-end web services. And I think that's a very important thing to talk about, with people. It's like, it's very easy to do the animated GIFs and the you know, the nice animations, you know, on the client. But anytime you talk, you know, you cross the realm into a business application, and your application is fundamentally about business. It's about making money. It's about e-commerce, right? Anytime you cross into that, your architecture has to be, you know, rich client-side experience for the end user, but you've got a set of services in the back end.
Very much so. We have a fairly standard back-end architecture. SQL Server 2005, solid, proven. There's no reason to even question that decision. We have a great data architect, so we have somebody who knows how to maintain the schema, make sure that there's indices in the right places and so on. He one major query, he knocked down by two orders of magnitude earlier this week. We use Link to SQL as a layer over top of that to access the data in the web service layer. We have a layer of WCF web services on top of that. That slide during my presentation drew quite the chuckle from the room. And then outside of that, it's the web, and Silverlight is great for talking to WCF. Behind the scenes, we don't have a lot of architecture behind that because it's such a focused application.
So why the chuckle about WCF? Was it something Rigsby said?
Kind of. Dan Rigsby is one of the local great .NET guys, and I was chatting with him, I think it was back in May of this year, talking about our older architecture. We originally used HTTP handlers and kind of a REST-based approach, and I was trying to decide what to do with this new Silverlight 2 thing and what we should change. And I was chatting with him one day, and he said, maybe WCF's a great idea. And he said, WCF is always the right idea.
That sounds like Dan.
That is Dan. And courtesy of that statement, the fact I still had it in my chat log, I devoted a slide to that exchange, and he was kind enough to share his Halloween costume with us, which is him just back from PDC, wearing the PDC Microsoft gear and his daughter's princess outfit.
Nice.
So that's on his blog. Go check it out.
So, yeah, I got to get a copy of that for the show notes. So, you know, you guys have to give me a pointer to that. So
I will be sure to. I saved off about four copies in case you tried to erase the evidence, so it's all good.
You save the negatives, you know, as it were, the digital world.
Exactly.
Okay, so I got a couple quick questions about, you know, your middle-tier back-end architecture, and that is, you know, Link to SQL. You know, any issues with that? Any concerns?
I've actually made the apparently somewhat controversial statement that Link to SQL is the best data access we've had thus far. The other guys in the .NET room, when I mentioned that during the presentation, were not in full agreement, but it has not given us any problems. It's fulfilled every need we've had, serializes out to WCF almost flawlessly. A handful of things where you need to pass certain links as out parameters because of two-way serialization concerns or circular reference concerns.
So are you guys using parameterized queries or are you using stored procedures? Or
We're letting Link take care of it for us, and it's doing a great job. Everything goes through as a parameterized query. We've done some performance tests just to see where the balance of power would lie, and it performs very admirably.
You know, it's interesting that in my conversations as an evangelist for Microsoft, the number one thing that people bring up about Link to SQL is the performance hit that you're going to take. And personally, I think that that's like the 10% edge case kind of thing. If you have performance concerns that are stressing Link to SQL, they're probably going to stress any data access method you use. You know, to me, it's more, you know, there's other architectural concerns about Link to SQL, you know, that make you want to address, particularly, you know, if you've got an internet-facing website, stored procedures or parameterized queries versus the, you know, embedded strings, if you're taking a lot of user input and all that. Performance really shouldn't be your concern because you are going to take a minor hit with Link to SQL, but it's nothing that's, you know, that, you know, you can't make it go away with hardware. It's not like it's an order of magnitude.
Yeah, I had those concerns originally. And I was actually convinced by one of the blog posts by Rico Mariani about him sitting down and hand-coding the best SQL he could code, thinking, wow, I should be able to beat this Link SQL thing. There is no way they could be this good. He beat them on select statements by a few percent. They beat him on inserts and updates.
Interesting.
And he, at that time, was considered one of the foremost performance experts at Microsoft. So that was good enough for me.
And he didn't have to go to, like, ODBC to beat him, right? You know?
He was handcrafting the best he could. I don't know, remember the details. It's been a couple years now.
Well, cool. So let's talk a little about the architecture of your Silverlight application. You mentioned you had two screens. Is that two different applications, or is it, you know, two different, you know, XAML forms?
We have them crafted as two different Silverlight applications. They share a common Silverlight class library that we use for, well, common things. And then each of them holds an extensive set of user controls that actually builds up the application. They each use one main page.xaml class. We didn't really go crazy with page switching. Or at least originally, the needs were different sizing and locations on the host page, so it was just easier to transition to a new page.
Right.
Beyond that, we do, like I said, we have the common class. A lot of our data access stuff is there, so it can be shared. Implemented an extra layer of command pattern around the WCF generated proxies so that we can defer calls and get more elaborate error reporting and tracing and such.
And you may not know the answer to this off the top of your head, but what's approximately the size of your XAML applications? How many extra libraries are you including in the download?
Our downloads are actually very hefty right now. That's one of our primary concerns. They're well over a meg, closer to 2 megs, I believe. Each one's a little different. I don't know the details because we are aggressively knocking them down. We've learned some of the things that we can pay close attention to save us, and it's not what we originally expected. It turns out that excessive path statements are one of the biggest, most painful aspects. We actually have a handful of graphic designers on staff that generate many of our assets for us.
Right.
And what comes out of expression design is not that great. They tend to render text as paths instead of word text blocks, and they take a lot more space as a result.
And that's something you need to optimize for. And it's unfortunately, there's no tool that comes in and says, you know, hey, you know, the word, you know, input, you know, is not actually text, which is really lightweight. It's, you know, 500 path statements, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, at this time, that tool is called Developer. And we have to sit down.
It's called Eric, maybe, you know?
It's Eric and Brian and the other guys on our team. We have 6 developers, and 2 architects and a data architect that have come together to build this thing. So we do very carefully review the materials that are coming in from our designers. For that same reason, we've gone away from accepting PNG assets to display on the screen and encourage them to learn design, learn blend, and help generate the assets through the normal XAML mechanisms that we can use more efficiently. Very few cases of the image smaller than the XAML used to render it.
So, really quick, the designers you have, are they classic, like, you know, Photoshop guys or whatever? And I'm wondering, and the reason I ask that is, you know, are they using any of the Illustrator to XAML tools that are available? Or
a year ago, they were both very classic Photoshop guys. One was actually very good at HTML and CSS, and they have both first started learning expression design, got pretty good with that, and were providing assets through there. And now they are learning blend and through pair programming exercises where they'll actually sit down with me as we take one of their basically graphically laid out screens and turn it into an object composition screen using the proper containers and showing them as we go how to apply the effects. Then they're learning these tools and starting to provide those out of the box for us, which then helps us reduce file size, get more efficiency on the application. They're making a direct impact on the application now.
Cool. So, you know, Eric, you and I have talked, you know, for months, you know, about Silverlight as you guys have adopted it. And I know that there was some trepidation about when you adopted it. Do you mind sharing about when you guys, you know, made the decision to go with Silverlight?
Okay. Well, in some ways, the decision to go with Silverlight was almost made for us. It was the 1st of February of this year. And a board meeting had just completed, and we got the news that we're now working on a new product. We want a photo book editor, and we had one day to get everything organized so we could start the following Monday.
Okay.
The architect sat down. We looked at things. We had a very solid ASP.NET team, great C-sharp guys, a handful of really good JavaScript guys. We had nothing that we had skill set for that could provide this out of the box. We didn't know ArrorFlex. We didn't know any of the Flash technologies. What we did know was .NET and C#, and we knew that Microsoft was releasing this Silverlight thing soon that would let you program in C#, and that they had this 1.0 Silverlight tool that was close, but it was all JavaScript. Now, at the time, we didn't really understand how far off 1.0 was from 2.0.
Right.
So we dug in, and through very heroic efforts by one of our developers, we wrapped a full functional editor around the page turn demo and built the first prototype version of InkyBook over the next 30 days.
Now, let me ask you something, because I want to put this in context for the listeners. This was 9-10 months ago. It was February. Microsoft had not yet released Silverlight 2 in any form. We'd said that, yeah, Silverlight 2 is coming at Mix, which was in March. But so you guys were either working with Silverlight 1.1 Alpha or with Silverlight 1.0 Release?
We were working with 1.0 Release, and we were watching all the news about WPF/E or 1.1 or, oh, wait, maybe it's going to be 2.0. And, I mean, that was one of the biggest struggles, is trying to understand what was going to happen while still producing a business application.
Right.
So we ended up going with Silverlight 1 through, I believe it was the end of April, somewhere in there. But as soon as 2.0 came out, we started building up our editor in parallel there. So in 2 to 3 weeks, I was able to reproduce everything we had and add the one killer feature that's kind of required for photo books, which is centered text.
Right.
So 1.0 did not support it. That was a major miss, and our board would not approve releasing to production without it. So that mandated we move to Silverlight 2, given the assets we already had in place.
So as an architect, one of the things I think that you're responsible for, and this is Larry's kind of, you know, quick aside, you know, kind of my words of wisdom, is one of the things that you own is identifying and either mitigating, transferring, you know, or deferring any technology risk. So you had to have had, as the architect on this project, you had to have angst every week about the fact that right now I am building something for production very soon. Our board wants it. And, you know, I'm building it on beta 1 or beta 2 bits. You know, things may change at any point. We may hit a showstopper that, you know, we don't have the opportunity to deal with. So how does that make you feel? How much sleep did you lose?
Luckily, for my case, we have a team of people who are kind of cowboys. They embrace the new technologies.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Probably far too much of an extent.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there were, especially right around the release transitions, beta 1 to beta 2 was concerning, but not so much because we hadn't actually dropped it. We weren't part of the beta 1 go live system yet.
Right.
But within, I believe it was a week and a half of beta 2 coming out, we were ready to push our beta 2 application to production. And then major angst around the final production release because of all the unknowns that were involved. Microsoft had provided RC0 a few weeks before, but with it came not enough information about what we needed to know to get a successful product. Not just getting it on the web, but keeping it on the web, because it was already out there. We were using Beta 2 under the Go Live license, and we had people that had built books. They'd given us money. They expected us to print the books for them. And one, I mean, there's a lot of frustrations around the final release point there because of what happened with the timing.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, I'll go and refresh it, and you've got a great blog post that we'll actually point to, you know, in the show notes, is, you know, the RC0 was made available for developers, was not actually released. It was your opportunity to look at the breaking changes that happened between Beta 2, you know, and the released one.
Right.
And then there was a notification that we're going to start rolling out RTW, you know, in a couple of days.
No, that you're actually, I think, providing a little bit too much lead time there. We actually had one of our developers who observed Microsoft's press release newswire or press room, I forget what the exact call is. But that was the only information we saw ahead of time, was that Scott Guthrie was going to have a conference call about Silverlight the following Monday, and this was on Friday.
Yeah.
We attended that conference call and found out that Silverlight RTW would happen essentially that night. I mean, that was the warning we got, that we needed to flip the switches.
12 hours, couple days, it's all the same, Eric.
it felt like it, because we had one guy who was starting that day, and he got to work overtime on his very first day. But
Woo! Overtime.
Yeah, fun.
I remember back when I used to actually get overtime pay, and now they just call that, you know, part of your job, you know.
That's very true. But the frustrating thing about the release to web and the RC0 was that, based on commentary and speaking to a couple of the program managers at Microsoft, I understand the impression was that, oh, we should just kind of roll our app over and have it sitting and waiting. But with no indication of how far apart RC0 was from RTW, we had no way of doing that. We had to continue building value, continue our development process. So I hit the high points, made sure it would compile, make sure that it wouldn't run, and it just kind of sat there as we continued adding functionality to the beta bits. knowing that, okay, we're at least aware of what the difficulties are. And the reality was that it only took about 2 business days to get it rolled over and ready to go.
Right.
And worked out in our favor that the content delivery networks weren't actually turned on for automatic pushes until a little later.
Right.
So we worked it out, but there was a lot of stress to our production systems that weren't really needed, I believe, if there were more communication about what to expect.
Yeah, and you've actually, you know, you've heard from Tim Heuer and a couple other folks, you know, and we've internalized the feedback on that because, you know, this isn't the last release of Silverlight. And, you know, God forbid there might be a security update that needs to happen, you know, in the same kind of fashion, right? That's going to be pushed out, right? Hopefully, if it's a security update, it's not something that has any breaking changes on code. But there are going to be, you know, additional feature enhancements in the future. And I know the team is going to internalize those things because, they heard from not just Incubook but other customers loud and clear.
Yeah, and honestly, from what I've seen from the outside, this looks like a case where the developer division within Microsoft needs to learn what their Windows division has known for a very long time, which is how do you patch running software that everybody's going to scream if it breaks? Usually developers can choose when to upgrade their tools. They don't have to do it on a certain day at a certain time. And that time constraint adds a whole new set of rules that maybe just people weren't quite ready for.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what you guys are doing with Silverlight. I mean, obviously you mentioned components a few times. Definitely when Silverlight 2 was announced, that probably had to have been a feature that you're really interested in. So tell us about some of the components you're using, either Microsoft or third party or ones you've rolled yourself.
Well, we've actually got a decent variety of all three. For those who aren't aware, the biggest switch between Silverlight 1 and Silverlight 2 is the ability to have real containers that implement layouts other than just absolute positioning. And among all the other controls, that's the biggest one. We use extensive grids and stack panels, and Component 1 has released a couple of the other WPF controls out, such as the flow panel and the dock panel. And those make the composing of a user interface screen very effortless. Combine that with the abilities of Microsoft Blend, Expression Blend, and you can do a great job of structuring a screen and structuring your application without ever leaving that tool. And then you write the code behind that, and it just works because you've already laid out everything. In my opinion, it's far better experience than any of the previous technologies have allowed, like ASP, ASP.NET, Windows Forms, basically everything except for WPF, which is what it's based on.
Right.
And then within that, we've used a couple of the Component 1 controls, specifically their flow panel. Until Microsoft added their own, we used their combo box. I believe we used the color picker, although we might have rewritten that ourselves to meet our needs. They have a great set of standing controls, and we're looking at others of theirs that may help us save money on building our own. We've also looked at the control suites that have been released on CodePlex. There's a few good ones there, but they don't really mesh well with our needs at this time.
Right.
We've identified a couple of them that we're going to keep in mind for potential future features should our marketing department ask for them. And then we use a pretty good variety of the internal shipped with Silverlight controls because, well, they're there for a reason.
Right, and they're nice because they're with the runtime, so you don't have to worry about, pulling any extra baggage down, right?
Yeah, that's something that is a big concern if people don't expect your app to be slow. We're in the lucky position that all of our competitors have very large, unwieldy applications because, frankly, there's a lot of images involved, and doing images on the web is hard when you got that many. So we get a little bit of leeway and grace from our customers so that initial speed is a concern, but it's not one that users are complaining about, at least not the users that bother to tell us.
Okay.
One of our biggest fears is that we're driving people away that never tell us about why, which is when you don't know your users or have ever seen them, that's a problem. But we've focused on a lot of our own controls then. We've become very good at adapting the user control model, and we've become very good at applying styles so that things that you would never expect are just buttons look like tabs or whatever else, but they're just buttons. They implement the standard controls because they're lookless. And
yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the most interesting control that you guys have built?
The most interesting control would have to be the main editor surface with all the drag-and-drop targets and the pop-up toolbar editors within them and the ability to do rich text on the surface, do photo manipulation on the surface without having to go outside to a external experience. It's all right there on the screen.
And I don't think I mentioned that, I mean, your site's public. It's open to everybody right now. They can go out there and start playing with this application right now to look to see what you guys have done. And if they're interested, they can actually, you know, create their own book, right?
Right. And actually, I'm not sure when this is going to be published, but by the time it goes out, we'll actually have calendar support and not just books. So you'll be able to create your 2009 calendars and basically do your normal, put 15 pictures of your kids on each page or whatever you want to do with it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's, I guess this is probably the big announcement for IncuBook. It's gone out on a couple marketing channels, but not public yet in most ways.
All right, well, we'll make sure that if it's not out there when the show is published, that, you know, we'll let people know that it's coming. So, as always, you should check your show notes at thirstydeveloper.com. So two final questions for you. The first is, because you guys went through the steep learning curve with Silverlight, and I'm sure that you identified as the architect on the project some invaluable resources for learning Silverlight. Could you share a couple of those with the listeners?
Sure. The best ones, now, I was out ahead of all the books, so by the time I'm saying this, there are books in the marketplace. I've not looked at them because I was learning while the same guys that wrote the books were. But let's see, Dave Campbell with Silverlight Cream is probably the number one resource to see what's going on out there in the Silverlight world. He updates at least once a day, it seems like, and it's always a good list of sites. Silverlight.net, of course, is the main Microsoft portal. That's what they want you to see as the main entry point for getting into Silverlight development. And as far as access to the developers and people that can answer your questions, those forums are by far the best source. There's tools that are developing, such as Silverlight Spy, which will help you dig in and truly understand what's going on with Silverlight. He's done a great job of keeping that updated throughout the Silverlight development process through all the betas. And then there's the internal Microsoft blogs. There's a number of them. Tim Howard, Jesse Liberty. I mean, I'm not going to bother listing them all right now, but just look for Microsoft Silverlight bloggers and you'll find them.
Yeah, and we'll put some of those in the show notes as well. So last question then, and this is, you know, I got to put the disclaimer in there. You know, as a Microsoft employee, you know, I'm not confirming or denying anything that I'm asking Eric. But kind of, you know, what do you see as the future of Silverlight? What's missing from the platform that you'd like to see added? This can be total wish list. It can be something that you know is coming, you know, something that's desperately needed, you know, whatever.
Well, I have a little bit of an edge on this because 2 days ago, Scott Guthrie did post some details about what's going to be in Silverlight 3. And I can talk about those and the 3D and the effects going there. But from what I see is probably going to happen is it's just going to be further development around making it the authoritative platform to do rich web applications. More like WPF, more seamlessly integrated and shared experience with WPF. Probably more effort focused at allowing you to actually share assets between applications that can be deployed in different ways. XBAP deployment is there, but it's weak. So you have the XAP Silverlight deployment. I imagine there'll be a lot of enhancements around its functionality as a smart client. Maybe more built-in platform support for retries if you have an active session but you've lost your connection briefly. Things like don't close your browser and we'll try again like some of the mail clients do. There'll probably be more modes of support around WCF, but right now it's fairly basic, but I know duplexing is on its way or mostly in there, so we can do push-based updates. We'll look forward to that if we get into doing a multi-user collaborative editor where you can be editing the same book as somebody else.
Right.
And I'm hoping that some of the dynamic language stuff that comes in from .NET 4 also filters through into Silverlight and allows more expressive programming. I can tell you that being able to use Link, not just the Link to SQL, but actually just Link as part of the language has saved us many, many lines of code and allowed us to express what we want to do and not just how we do it.
Right.
Parallelization may come in. At least for us, it hasn't been an issue in any way yet because, well, we're just a big GUI app. It's all on the same thread for us.
Yeah, the user is always on your thread, right? Everything is kind of waiting for the user to do something, so that's kind of a natural built-in threading model there.
Right. We have a few background tasks, like uploading images goes on in the background so you're not sitting there staring. And all of our updates to the server push and then continue. We don't force the user to wait for responses. And actually, that's one of the best things, I think one of the best decisions they made in the Silverlight runtime was that in the libraries, they excluded the synchronous operations. They forced you down the asynchronous path, and that
every call in Silverlight is an asynchronous call, which is the model that you want in the client-centric.
Right. But it makes it easy to do that instead of confusing it with the different options. And that was a brilliant step, I think.
Well, cool. So, Eric, you have a blog address you want to share with people so they can follow your adventures as we go forward?
Sure. I'm at manicprogrammer.com/Willicke, manicprogrammer.com/Willeke. I do not like spelling that one. I need a shorter one.
Once again, just go to the show notes. We'll have a link there.
I write there occasionally. I'm by no means prolific, but when I write, I try to keep them to be fairly solid posts.
You go in spurts. Like, I think a lot of technology people, like when they get busy doing things, they have great ideas for blog posts, they don't have the time to execute. When they get time, they'll spit out three or four in a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm hoping that comes soon. We just pushed our big calendar feature set off to software quality assurance, and hopefully I don't have much work to do for the next few days.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the Thirsty Developer.
I always enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. In this week's interview, Eric sits down with Eric Willicke, an architect who works for Incubook, a company that's launched an application using Silverlight 2 technologies. Let's listen in.